Greetings and welcome to The Fuse, the podcast of Confluence Concerts. My name is Larry Beckwith. On this episode, our first of 2025, we are sharing stimulating conversations I had recently with two young Canadian composers, Michael Spiroff and Francesca Hauser. They are making their marks in unique and interesting ways, and will be represented with world premieres in an upcoming Confluence Concerts show. We'll speak about these new pieces, the composers' backgrounds and approaches to composition, and much more. Michael Spiroff and Francesca Hauser, my guests on this episode of The Fuse. Hello, and thank you so much for joining me. It's a new year, and we've been busy on many fronts at Confluence Concerts. Intensive planning for upcoming concerts this season, discussions about longer-range plans over the next few years, and keeping abreast of concerts and other events in which our colleagues around the city are involved. Indeed, it's been a joy recently to attend a splendid concert by the Toronto Symphony, at which they gave a superb performance of Dvorak's New World Symphony. An unbelievably creative doctoral percussion recital by last year's Confluence Young Artistic Associate Hoi Tong Kyung. And a beautiful clarinet trio concert presented at Heliconian Hall by Northwinds Concerts. There's so much first-rate music-making going on every day in the city and beyond. I encourage you to get out and support our wonderful local companies, large and small. We are in rehearsals now for the next Confluence concert entitled Sighs Too Deep for Words, A Canadian Valentine, happening February 13th and 14th at 7:30 p.m. at Heliconian Hall. The centerpiece of the show is a performance of Omar Daniel's brilliant Neruda Canciones for solo soprano madrigal group and lute to the earthy poetry of Pablo Neruda. They were commissioned by Toronto Mask Theatre in 2005 with the support of the Laidlaw Foundation and given their premiere at the Gladstone Hotel in February 2006. To complement these wonderful songs, we thought it would be a great idea to commission new works by two young Toronto-based composers, and I'm delighted to be able to chat with both of them on this episode of the program. Michael Spiroff is a composer, music director, pianist, and educator. Originally from and currently based in Toronto, Michael is a graduate of McGill University and the Manus School of Music in New York. As a composer, Michael has been commissioned by a variety of soloists and ensembles and has had works performed across Canada, the United States, the United Kingdom, and Australia. Michael is an active accompanist and music director, also working professionally as a film composer, teacher, church musician, blues pianist, actor, and choir member. Michael is comfortable in a variety of musical styles and enjoys the challenge of harnessing the nuances that define musical idioms. Michael Spiroff, welcome to The Fuse.
Thanks very much. It's good to be here.
So, Michael, tell us a little bit about your background as a composer. When did you first come to writing music?
So I did a lot of musical theater in my youth when I was a teenager. And at the same time, I was studying saxophone, I was studying piano, and it was during my high school years that I was asked to write a score for my school's play. It wasn't a musical, it was a play, but they asked for an incidental score. And when I wrote that, that was my first kind of real chance to compose a piece of any sort of length. And that sort of opened up this window to me of, oh, this could be a really cool thing to pursue. So when grade 12 came around, I applied to composition programs. And I got into the Manus School of Music, which is the classical department of the New School in Manhattan. I did my undergrad there. I did my master's at McGill, finishing in 2022. And then these days I compose in a handful of genres. I compose within the jazz idiom, within the sort of musical theater idiom, and the contemporary classical, which is quite a wide umbrella, but that's where I am now.
Oh, that's great. And tell me a bit about your experience at Manus in New York. That must have been exciting.
Yeah, Manus was wonderful. I studied with Missy Mazzoli, a great American composer n known mostly for her operas. And when I was studying with her, I mean, her career was really taking off in those years. So studying with her every week and seeing the ins and outs of her career was wonderful. And living in New York at the same time, it goes without saying that living in a city like that is very daunting, but very inspirational as well. And just being thrown into an environment like that, a very small program, a very intense program, where everybody's so eager and everybody is so just kind of enveloped in this world of music, is it forces you to kind of bring your best, but it also just kind of allows you to be who you are in the musical context, which is a great thing.
Amazing. And that must have been I mean, as you describe it, you sort of fell into writing in at the end of high school, and then to be as you say, immersed in it in New York. Can you remember the kinds of ways in which you grew as a composer through those years?
That's a great question. I mean, I guess the big thing that comes to mind is just being exposed to so many types of music that I didn't even know were out there. I think when you're at that age, 17, 18, you kind of think you have a sense of the world and of your music, but then you get thrown into an environment like that with people who have infinite wisdom and knowledge, and you realize, oh my God, I didn't even know a fraction of a percent of the music that's out there. So I think just simply being exposed to all of these different types of music all at once, it's overwhelming, but it's kind of like putting on goggles to something for the first time and going, whoa, this is all there. And then, especially while you're a student and you're not worried about the real world yet, you can experiment in ways that just allow your creativity to flow.
And then you went came back to Canada and studied in at McGill. What was the experience there like?
McGill was great. I mean, roughly half my time there was COVID years, so that obviously kind of tainted the experience there. But McGill was wonderful. It was interesting moving back to Canada, but to Montreal, which is obviously not exactly just simply moving back to where I grew up. I grew up in Toronto, but Montreal was wonderful. I love the scene there, and I lived in the Plateau, which is a wonderful, very kind of bohemian neighborhood. And I got to know a lot of really interesting people. McGill is just as international as any type of great music program is. And while I was there, I wrote my thesis piece on Macedonian music. I did a chamber opera telling the story of my family coming from Macedonia to Canada, which took a good amount of my years there. But it was a wonderful experience, and in one sense, it was kind of an ethno-musicological type thing, but it was also a very personal thing for me, kind of delving into that part of my identity. And the piece unfortunately didn't get performed because of COVID, but spending all that time really kind of digging into the nitty-gritty of the traditional music was a great thing for me there.
Can you talk a bit about the style or the story of the piece as as you wrote it? I mean, did you write the libretto or was it
So the libretto was done by my girlfriend Anique, who's not Macedonian, but she's an actress and singer, and she at the time had already known me for quite some time, and she wrote the libretto, and my father did some of it was translated into Macedonian, most of it was in English, but the sections that were in Macedonian were translated by my dad, which is a really cool experience for the three of us to tackle that. And once she finished the libretto, we worked it into these five tableaus, basically, with this sort of symmetry with them, the beginning starting with the family in the old country and the ending with the family here, and this sort of chiasmus shape. And it was a really fun structure to work within, and just being able to look at the traditional music with a little bit of an academic lens is really helpful, because you can kind of hear all of the different elements, but really kind of examining it with a microscope for the amount of time that I did, you start to notice patterns and realize what makes it, right? It's unique characteristics.
Interesting. Can you talk a bit about Macedonian music? Because I know we're going to get into talking about the piece you've written for Confluence, which also has a Macedonian theme.
Absolutely. I mean, Macedonia being right in the heart of the Balkans, musically and otherwise, has so many different influences from every direction for centuries and for millennia. And the biggest characteristic of the music is the highly irregular rhythms, sevens and nines and 11s and 13s, and sometimes even more complex patterns than that, and often at quite a rapid pace. And it creates these wonderful dance rhythms and dance patterns that are known by the people. And I think the coolest thing is, the Macedonian people who dance know these rhythms, and they won't necessarily be able to break them down in terms of the numerical values, but they know these pulses very, very accurately, and can dance and know them as sort of a series of strong beats and weak beats, and where the kind of the emphasis goes, maybe in the middle of the phrase. And it's a very, very lively, very quirky result in the kind of music. And the instrumentation is interesting as well. There's the gaita, which is a type of bagpipe that's used in a lot of the music. The clarinets are very common, the accordion. A lot of the folk music is quite loud and is quite vibrant. And it makes for a very, there's a lot of joy in the music. It's a society, and it's a culture that's been through a lot of turmoil and a lot of tragedy. But to hear the music being full of so much joy and so much of liveliness and so much hope is a really amazing thing about it.
You are listening to The Fuse, the podcast of Confluence Concerts. My name is Larry Beckwith, and on this episode, I'm speaking with composer Michael Spiroff in advance of the world premiere performances of his work Zazaruva, or Dawn is Breaking, Settings of the Macedonian Poet Avo Shopov. These performances take place at Heliconian Hall on February 13th and 14th at 7:30 p.m. Let's hear a little of Michael Spiroff's music now. This is a live recording of the fourth movement of a work for solo piano entitled Towards the Caravanserai. The title of this movement is The Angels Bathe, from the world premiere performance in Lambton, Quebec on August 3rd, 2024. This is pianist Jeffrey Marcus. The Angels Breathe by Michael Spiroff.
Thank you.
pianist Jeffrey Marcus performing The Angels Breathe, a movement of a solo piano work entitled Caravanserai by Canadian composer Michael Spiroff. Confluence Concerts is presenting the world premiere of Michael's work entitled Zazaruva for five singers, piano, and double bass as part of our Canadian Valentine Concerts on February 13th and 14th at Heliconian Hall. For more information, you can visit confluenceconcerts.ca. You're listening to The Fuse, the podcast of Confluence Concerts. My name is Larry Beckwith. Now back to my conversation with Michael Spiroff. For his four songs that he's written for Confluence, Michael chose texts by the remarkable Macedonian poet Avo Shopov, and Michael spoke about the heightened nature of the poetry that he found compelling.
There's a real underlying sort of anxiety and an underlying sense of worry and sense of not necessarily doom through the whole thing, but there is actually a sense of doom at certain moments. So I think, you know, for these poems to be talking about love and to have this sort of hopeful flame in them, but at the same time as this deep anxiety is a really, I mean, there's a real beauty to something like that. And the four poems that I chose are not a set of four poems in the way they were written. I did handpick those and place them in the order that I did. And the opening poem is called Nightfall. It involves this idea of falling asleep. And the final poem is Waking, and the idea of waking up from sleep. And the two poems in the middle are this sort of dream sequence. And the idea of dreams is something that's fascinated me my whole life, and what dreams are. I mean, at this stage in human history, we have or at least we like to think we have a good sense of a lot of the human experience, but dreams is something that is completely a big hovering question mark. We don't even have we can't even begin to understand really what
a mystery, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a real mystery. And it's something that's really fascinated me in the relationship between music and dreams as well. How we can hear music so vividly in our dreams is something that I do experience from time to time, and something that I do think about a lot. So that was coming to mind, you know, quite a bit while writing this piece, and as well this underlying theme of love and different aspects of what love is, and how, you know, when we're sleeping and we're dreaming, you know, we can. Our dreams can be a reflection of our reality. They can be a reflection of our wishes, our fears, and everything in between.
And how did you approach setting? I mean, I guess I gave you some parameters in terms of the performers that were slated to perform on the show. But how did you kind of organize that in terms of the sound world that you wanted to create?
Absolutely. So the piece is set for four voices in a quartet, for a soprano soloist, which will be Anais Kelsey Verdecchia, and a piano and a double bass as well. So the way I've structured the piece, the opening movement is just the piano and the quartet of voices singing the Nightfall movement, which goes directly into the second movement, which has the soloist singing with the piano and the bass in a very lively song, which is influenced heavily by the dance rhythms of Macedonian music. And by the end of the piece, we have the waking movement, where everybody is actually performing for the first time. We have the soloist with the solo singer with the vocal quartet with the piano and the bass all together. And you know, for me, the challenge was, you know, how do I create this sort of dream world? How do I delineate between the sort of the quote unquote the real world versus this dream state? And you know, instrumentation is a really useful way to do something like that, because the audience, the ear sort of picks up on, oh, there's suddenly a new instrument, or oh, suddenly something is out of the texture, and that in and of itself can really really change the sound world that we're in.
Well, that's great. Is there anything else you want to say about the piece? I mean, I think you've explained it beautifully. Maybe a little bit more about the poet, who I understand was a sort of hero of 20th century Macedonian poetry, and even kind of revived or took it into a new era.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his poetry is really fascinating. There's a lot of darkness to it. He had a childhood that was full of death and disease all around him, and it was a really, really tragic youth that he had. But He went on to have this wonderful career, and he was an ambassador for what was at the time Yugoslavia, in West Africa. And he, upon returning to Yugoslavia, he brought back all of this really beautiful wisdom with him. And there's a certain timelessness to his poetry. I mean, even reading the English translations, I mean, you can imagine it kind of being anywhere in the world at any given time, which I think is a sign of a really wonderful poet who touches on these universals and these sort of themes that anybody from anywhere can kind of go, oh, geez, yeah, that really hits home, which I mean, I'm not a poet myself, and I imagine that's a very, very difficult thing to do, but he does it very well. And throughout these four poems, there's definitely these sort of this universality that's there, which is really wonderful.
Well, that's great. As we are recording this, we're on the eve of our first rehearsals for the show, and really looking forward to delving into this new piece. I also want to congratulate you. We on in conversing and planning around this, we encouraged you to apply to the Toronto Arts Council for funding, and you were successful in that. And we're very grateful to the Arts Council for supporting this commission. And we just really look forward to presenting it on February 13th and 14th.
Yes, no, it really, I appreciate the grant from Toronto Arts Council. I mean, they do so much great work, and to have this commission supported by them is has been a really terrific part of it. So yeah, I'm very grateful as well.
Great to talk to you today, Michael, and we'll see you soon.
Likewise, Larry, great to talk to you, and I'll see you soon.
My thanks to Michael Spiroff for speaking with me about his upcoming world premiere of Zazaruva, Dawn is Breaking, for Confluence Concerts. The shows are February 13th and 14th and feature sopranos Patricia O'Callaghan, Anais Kelsey Verdecchia, and Alison Beckwith, mezzo-soprano Anika Venkatesh, tenor Larry Beckwith, yours truly, and bass Dion Mazerolle, with pianist Christopher Bagan, tenor and lutenist Jonathan Stutchbury, and bassist Andrew Downing. Heliconian Hall at 7:30 p.m., and all the details are available at confluenceconcerts.ca. There is another world premiere on that program from the young composer Francesca Hauser to a text by Anika Venkatesh. The song, entitled Fluidity, will be sung by Anika with pianist Christopher Bagan. Francesca Hauser is a composer and vocalist from Toronto, Canada. Her music has been performed by Canadian ensembles such as the Ontario Youth Choir and Exultate Chamber Singers, as well as ensembles across North America and Europe. She performs, composes, and records a wide variety of music, spanning across many genres and media. Francesca holds a Bachelor of Music in Voice from the University of Toronto. She is continuing her studies at U of T in the Masters of Music, Technology, and Digital Media program. Her master's work is focusing on composing, performing, and producing an original art song project. And Francesca Hauser joins me now. Welcome to The Fuse.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you represented on this program. I've known you for a long time, and
Yep.
I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about what led you to composing. At your young age, you've had many triumphs already, and just interested in how you found your way to writing music.
Yeah, I feel like I've been composing for as long as I can remember, with both my parents being musicians and very supportive. So, started from a young age with little songs, and then those little songs turned into bigger songs as they do. So, I think in high school, I started composing more and more, and I started off my degree in vo voice performance, and that was great, but it kind of hit a wall, and I just felt like I was doing all of this composing on the side, and I felt like I wasn't able to fully honor the things that I was starting to become like way more passionate about. So I switched gears. I kind of went to a more general stream, and then from there it gave me more time to like really hone in on the things that I wanted to do. So that was like one of the best decisions I'd made in my undergrad.
So currently you're finishing a master's
Yes.
degree in composition.
In music and technology.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you
So,
explain that a little bit?
yeah, I know that's like the common, whenever I tell someone that I'm doing my master's, they're like, it has to be in composition, right? I'm like, it actually, yeah, it's not, but it's been really great. I kind of wanted to do the composing and honor it in my own way, like outside of school. But then in school, like do the more practical stuff and be able to have the resources to like record my compositions and stuff. So that was kind of how I decided to go into music and tech. And I've always had an interest in producing and all of that stuff as well. So it seemed like why not do both if I can? So yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Have there been people along the way that have been sort of mentors or taken you to the next level in your compositional life?
Yeah. I think I did in 2023, I was a composition fellow at Songfest in Nashville. And my primary mentor was Libby Larson, who I look up to a lot. And she really inspired me before that experience in Nashville. But in that experience, I felt like I learned so much from her just by her talking. So she was a mentor to me at that time and someone that I'm grateful for. I also think my dad is a mentor. I really value his musical opinion. So whenever I have a piece or anything, I always play it for him and I'm like, what do you think? And he kind of will give me his two cents on it. So I think those are like the main two.
So, when we were putting together this Canadian Valentine program, which is happening February 13th and 14th, Heliconian Hall, we centered it around a piece that I commissioned almost 20 years ago now from Omar Daniel, who's a wonderful Canadian composer and professor at the University of Western, called the Neruda Canciones. Which features Patricia O'Callaghan and a kind of madrigal group behind her and a lute. And then we came to into contact with the composer Michael Spiroff, who has written a sort of a mirror piece to the Neruda Canciones on Macedonian poetry, very kind of rough, well, looking at the dark side of love, I suppose, as Neruda does as well. And I did think it would be and we're going to have all kinds of different things on the program as well, all kinds of existing repertoire, all Canadian, but I thought it would be wonderful to have a song from you. And in my mind I sort of thought, well, I knew your close friendship with our alto soloist, Anika Venkatesh.
Yep.
And so I thought it would be wonderful if you would write a song for them, and perhaps you could pick up the thread of our conversation and how that led to the song that you have written.
Yeah, that was such an amazing, like, I don't know. When we talked about it, I was just like, this is such a great opportunity for me and Anika to collaborate because it's something that we've talked about so much, like over the course of our friendship. Because, just as friends, I feel like we're telepathic in some ways. Like we really jive. So, yeah, it was really exciting, but I heard that Anika was going to be singing and that you wanted me to compose for them. And I talked to Anika and, I knew that I wanted the piece to obviously be special for me, but be equally as special for Anika. And I wanted us to both have stakes in it. And so we talked briefly about a couple options and talked about maybe Anika writing poetry, but we kind of moved away from that for some reason. And I was looking at Elsa Gidlow poetry. I was looking at a lot of sapphic poets, and it was all really great stuff, but nothing was kind of clicking and nothing was making me get that moment where I can sit down and feel like really inspired and motivated to write a piece that felt like super special to the both of us. And then Anika came over for coffee one morning and we were talking about poetry. And then we came back to the idea of Anika writing poetry. And we were both like, why did we ever stray from this? Like, this was such a great idea. Like, it makes no sense as to like why we would think about anything differently. And I just said to Anika, like, write whatever you want. And just like, you can send me journal entries, you can send me anything. Like, in my like composing process, I'm not super like line by line. Everything has to be perfectly set. Like, I really love taking pieces and piecing them together. So I was just like, send me as much as you have. And Anika sent me about maybe 5 or 6 pages of poetry that they had written. And it was just really beautiful. And it came from such an honest perspective. And it was such honest writing and beautiful writing that I really wanted. I felt so honored to be able to set it. Yeah, and it comes from Anika's queer experience, and that was really important, like for our collaboration to highlight, especially for this Canadian Valentine concert, not just one kind of love, but a bunch of different kinds of love as well. Yeah.
That's terrific. And the result, it's sort of fragments of poetry, I suppose. Or is this one existing poem that you took from them, or?
So my process was very improvisatory, and so I kind of was reading it, singing it, and during the whole singing and recording and everything, I sent bits and pieces to Anika. And the more that I sent, the more that it kind of came together, and Anika would tweak, oh, I want to add this line here, or like, let me take this line out, or I was like, do you have another sentence that is similar to this or something? And we kind of just worked together to kind of puzzle this poem together. But yeah, it was born out of a lot of improvising of like on the five sheets. Yeah.
Neat, but the resulting text is very beautiful, and it's called Fluidity. Can you talk about the significance of the title?
Yeah. So I think fluidity. The first line of the poem is, do you see me taken my frame fraught with fluidity? And I felt like just the whole theme of the poem is just about this fluidness and this openness and this acceptance and embracing the new and how warm that can be and how exciting that experience can be. And it's kind of like a declaration of love and of fluidity as well. So that's kind of how it all came together. Yeah.
And I know you had the sort of confines of voice and piano. Talk a bit about how you fashioned the piano part.
Yeah, I think the piano is, you know, th this is something like I talk about with a lot of my composer friends all the time, is how sometimes writing it down, like, is really difficult because there's just so many motions and movements that come so naturally, especially like to me. So I tried to write down something that was like a very me piano improvising, and I didn't want it to make it too, I'm never concerned about it being any kind of like, oh, I have to make it look like this perfect, you know, art song-esque piano. I just wanted it to be very open. And like, especially keeping the piano very open for Anika for when coaching it, for them to be able to improvise and riff and ad lib, and for it to be kind of this beautiful dance between the two. Yeah.
Neat. That's great.
Yeah.
We look forward to hearing the premiere on the 13th and 14th. Is there anything else you want to say about the piece?
I'm just so excited. I think. Yeah, it's I think this commission has like really inspired both me and Anika to like hopefully do more collaborations and yeah, build on what we created together. So thank you so much.
Well, it's our pleasure. having you represented on this program, and I really hope that we'll hear your music on more and more platforms in the coming years. So thanks for being my guest today.
Thanks, Larry. Thank you.
Composer Francesca Hauser, whose song Fluidity will be given its world premiere by mezzo-soprano Anika Venkatesh and pianist Christopher Bagan, as part of Sighs Too Deep for Words, A Canadian Valentine, the next concert in the Confluence Concerts 2024-2025 season, taking place February 13th and 14th at Heliconian Hall in Toronto at 7:30 p.m. There's a pre-show chat with composers Omar Daniel, Michael Spiroff, and Francesca Hauser at 6:45 each night. That's all for this episode of The Fuse. Thank you so much for joining us, and my thanks to Francesca Hauser and Michael Spiroff for the great conversations. Past episodes of The Fuse are available wherever you get your podcasts. If you have an opportunity to rate us and share the episodes with anyone you feel would be interested, we'd be very grateful. My name is Larry Beckwith, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon. Bye for now.